Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of Large Old Cup. My name is Corey, and you're here with me now. So, usually what happens when I record these episodes is the second that I'm finished and the episode is posted, I immediately kind of start going, all right, now what am I going to talk about next week? And that's sort of the beauty of this whole process, is not knowing what I'm going to talk about before I talk about it. But then every now and then, something happens, and you go, okay, that's the topic. So for me, last episode, it was because I was having a hypomanic issue, which I will tell you, the rubber band has snapped in the opposite direction, and now I'm feeling a little weird. And when this happens, I usually question reality for a bit, like second-guessing myself and wondering if I'm experiencing things the way I'm supposed to be experiencing them, or basically re-examining my interactions with people and wondering, like, did I do that right? Or was I completely off base? So it's really funny that the whole notion of questioning reality is coming about, because unfortunately, we as a larger world lost David Lynch. For those of you who are not familiar with David Lynch is an auteur. One of the really, in my opinion, one of the last great ones. But an auteur is basically a filmmaker who has their own personal influence and artistic style in which they make their movies. Wes Anderson is an auteur. Robert Eggers is an auteur. Martin Scorsese is an auteur. And these are basically just people who have their own flavor of what they do. Like, if you've seen a Wes Anderson movie, you know what I'm talking about. Now, David Lynch was the same way. And David Lynch's sort of calling card was this sort of, everything he made felt like a dream. Everything felt a little hazy, and that these bizarre things would happen that would make you second guess reality, essentially. You know, David Lynch is mostly well known for Twin Peaks, of course, which was a television show that ran in the 90s for two seasons. David Lynch has also made Lost Highway, and his first and only big budget movie, Dune, which starred Kyle MacLachlan, who is another calling card of the auteur, is they have their go-to actors. Kyle MacLachlan, of course, is one of David's go-to actors for his movies and projects. But that also is a version that had Sting. Everybody remembers Sting in the metal, you know, Speedo. But with another calling card for David Lynch, of course, was like movies like Blue Velvet. And like I said, the kind of recurring theme was this sort of strange and bizarre things would happen, and it left you wondering, what did I just see and why? And one of my favorite things about David Lynch is that he never wanted to explain why. Because of his passing, I've seen a lot of people commenting and posting quotes and video clips of him and stuff. And I've shared quite a few on my personal Instagram account, and I'll probably share a bunch on Large Old Cups this week. But David was very much a believer in that the answer does not matter as much as the question. The question is important, because the question is what makes you think. The answer is your gratification. It is somebody telling you, this is how you need to experience the world. This is how things are. This is what you need to do, and when and where and how and why. But if you just ask a question, it leaves it open to interpretation, and anything can mean anything. So I think the perfect example of a David Lynch movie that leaves people questioning things is Lost Highway. If you watch Lost Highway, it is a movie that does not make a lot of sense. The movie starts with one main character. Partway through the movie, he disappears, and you get another main character. And then you follow that main character around for a while, and then he disappears. And then you go back to the first character. Robert Blake, convicted murderer, plays this mysterious man who turns up and speaks very cryptically. And it seems like the main character is the only person who can see him and interact with him, even though they're in a crowded room. Regardless, his involvement's not really explained either. It's just he's sort of the harbinger of weird things are about to happen. So I'm going to skip going, giving you a blow by blow of what happens in Lost Highway, because again, it doesn't really matter, because it's a movie that many people have seen and they scratch their head and they're like, what do I do with this knowledge? What is this? What happened? I saw a theory years ago and it has stayed with me. And this theory is, and by all no means, it is not the answer to what's going on. Because again, David does not care about answering questions. He's just asking them. So, the theory is that Lost Highway is a movie about the creative process, more particularly writing. You are introduced to a main character. The main character has a backstory. He has a supporting cast. You get to know him for a little bit. He's not terribly likable. He has his call to action moment. Things start to progress. But then he goes away. And he gets replaced with another character. So what has happened, according to this theory, is that... and first off, the mysterious man that's played by Robert Blake, the mysterious man is the stand-in for the writer. He's why he knows that he interacts with the main character and speaks to him, and nobody else notices him. And there's a line that the mysterious man gives when he's first introduced to the first main character, who's Bill Pullman, which is, "We've met before." And Bill Pullman's really confused by that comment. And it's going by this theory, it's because that's who was introduced. He created him. That's how he knows him. That's how he met him. So anyway, Robert Blake is our writer. He has met our main character. He has changed something about his life to move the story forward. And now partway through, he realizes this main character doesn't work. I don't like where this story is going. I'm going to crumple it up and I'm going to start again. And then we get a new main character. And we meet this new main character's backstory. And we meet his supporting cast. And he has his call to action. And then our writer turns up again, and this character's not working either. Ball it up, throw it out. Let's bring back the first character. Maybe we weren't done with him. Maybe we didn't give him enough time to cook. Maybe there was something more to this idea. And there's, of course, more to the theory than this, and there's a lot more supporting evidence that this is what it could be. But again, the only person who knows the answer to that question is David Lynch, and he never told anyone. He didn't want to. There's a lot of very mysterious things about his way of doing stuff. The first film he ever made that people will point out is Eraserhead. In Eraserhead, starring another one of his go-to actors, Jack Nance, involved this mutated baby that David apparently created himself. And rumor has it was made out of dead animal parts and things. And it was like a puppet, and nobody really knows for sure what happened, and he didn't fucking tell a soul, you know? Like, that is the beauty of him being such a weirdo. You know, like, he was absolutely doing things his own way. He's marching to the beat of his own drummer. And that's what made David so interesting, is his perspective on things. It was constantly challenging and shifting. It asked questions, it didn't provide answers, and if you watched his movies and you got to thinking about stuff about them, then that was mission accomplished. That's the point. I mean, the point of art is to make you question yourself. It's to make you think about reality, and is this how I'm supposed to be interpreting it? Is there other ways to interpret this? And kind of go on this voyage. The very notion of philosophy is the discovery of the truth. And you only get the truth by questioning it. So in a roundabout way, David Lynch was probably one of our modern great philosophers, especially just like I said, how he sees the world. So that's kind of a background on David Lynch, and I'm going to give you my own personal backstory with David Lynch. A lot of people my age encountered David Lynch through Twin Peaks, because we all fell in love with 90s culture, and Twin Peaks was pretty big in the 90s. For me, though, my first exposure was the movie Blue Velvet. And I was exposed to that movie way too early. My brother and I are 15 years apart. And we shared a bedroom for at least a year, I think. And in that year, my brother had a TV in the room, and it had full cable. So it had HBO and Showtime and Cinemax and all those channels that aired movies. And as such, I was exposed, because as a kid, I was a bit of an insomniac and couldn't sleep. I was exposed to a lot of stuff. I was exposed to The Kids in the Hall on HBO, which is one of my favorite comedy shows of all time. I love Kids in the Hall. I was exposed to the Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and Child's Play and The Thing and all of these horror movies that, like, I had this reputation at school that if you wanted to know what happened in a scary movie, go ask Corey, because he's seen them, you know, because it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I can't sleep. So I'm going to watch a man in a hockey mask chop some teenagers up with an axe, you know, that's my background. So one of these movies that were playing while I was young and unable to sleep, which, by the way, to give you an idea of the age difference again, 15 years. So if my brother is 20 years old, I was 5. So I was 5 years old watching this stuff. So Blue Velvet is a movie about a young man who falls down a rabbit hole, essentially, when he comes home from college and he finds a severed ear. This leads him on a trail that leads to a beautiful and abused lounge singer and the man who has kidnapped her father, or not her father, but her husband and child, and is extorting her for sex in return for their safety. The amazing Dennis Hopper plays this character, Frank. And there are so many fucking great Dennis Hopper lines in Blue Velvet that I, again, heard way too young in life. You know, and Blue Velvet is a movie about kink, essentially. It's a movie about bondage and BDSM and rough sex. And yeah, because Dennis Hopper engages in age play and, in battering, you know, a non-consensual battering of, this woman who's played by the, gorgeous Isabella Rossellini. And, you know, she's kind of into it, but not, you know, because she's not doing this above her own free will. And I'm going to try not to quote a bunch of Dennis Hopper lines here, but I mean, baby wants to fuck is goddamn. That's one time I was at Goth Night, and there was this song that was playing, you know, big, heavy EDM, you know, big bass music. And all of a sudden, this sound clip of Dennis Hopper going, baby wants to fuck, comes on. And it's like, dear God, wow. But anyway, Kyle MacLachlan ends up developing a sexual relationship with her. And in the course of their sexual relationship, she begins to ask Kyle to hit her in the face hard. So while they're engaging in consensual sex, Kyle MacLachlan is slapping her hard in the face over and over again, to the point she gets a chipped tooth, but she's into it. And like, that's, you know, again, there are no answers in these movies. There's only questions. So you get what you take out of it. And the most common thing that people take out of Blue Velvet that I've seen is that there is a way to have a healthy, consensual relationship that is physically abrasive, essentially. You know, if you and your partner are into it, beat the hell out of each other, you know, that kind of thing. But that, like I said, that was kind of my first exposure to David Lynch. was the movie Blue Velvet, and then falling down the rabbit hole with Mulholland Drive and Lost Highway, Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, Eraserhead. There's so much beautiful work there, because David Lynch was such a glorious weirdo. I recently discovered the other day the genesis of the word weird, because I like to use weird. I found out that it is a very powerful word, essentially. The word weird comes from the Old English word wired, W-Y-R-D, which means fate or destiny. Essentially, if someone is weird, they're in control of their own destiny. And this comes from, if you want to go back to Macbeth, the weird sisters, or the three witches, the witches of fate, from the beginning of the story, they were originally called the weird sisters because they control destiny and fate. And so if you're weird, if you're truly weird, you are someone who has mastered their destiny and mastered their fate. And January seems like a very complicated time for me. My birthday was on Tuesday. I am 38 years old. I am looking 40 down the barrel. I'm not afraid of aging. It is what it is, essentially. But, you know, I was born and I'm weird. And we lost, David Bowie was born in January and he passed away in January and he is the master of weird. And now David Lynch has passed away in January. And it's like, maybe this is like a power month, you know, maybe those of us who are weird are getting our strength from the month of January. I don't know where I'm going with this, but essentially, like, it is, there was, when David Bowie died, there was this, I think it was Simon Pegg who stated that, you know, everybody's sad, but we should really all be grateful that we were alive at the same time as David Bowie. And that is very true, because David Bowie is to music what David Lynch is to film, except a little different. David Bowie was gloriously weird, and he allowed himself to adapt and evolve and change his sound and his look and his presentation over and over again. And David Lynch was a creature of habit. He ate the same thing for lunch every single day. He ate the same thing for dinner every single day, with the belief that a strong foundation is what allows him to open his mind and travel the multiverse, the universe, time and dimension freely and questioning as he did. So these were men that were, you know, masters of their own destiny and fate. And it is a little sad to think that the world is now less for that. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't know if there are people ready to replace these people, you know? I think that the modern culture and the modern society, they don't like to take chances on weirdos anymore. And I think some of the people that are marketed as weirdos are just that. They're marketed. They may have an unusual presentation, but the quality of the work they put out is so very much like everything else. You know, David Lynch put out stuff that made you scratch your head. David Bowie put out stuff that was revolutionary multiple times. And I just don't know if there's anything like that anymore, and that's a bit sad. So, you know, maybe that's a call to action for everyone. If you find yourself to be weird, if you think you're a weirdo, then it's time to master your fate. It's time to master your destiny. It's time to put yourself out into the world. Put yourself out, shout into the void, and see what comes back at you. Large Old Cup was a podcast I came up with because I wanted something to do. And I was motivated and inspired by a similar podcast that is maybe not as free-flowing as this one. But it was also a method of me trying to figure out what my art form is. I come from a family of athletes, but I've never, like, despite being kind of naturally athletic, I don't have a desire to be an athlete for the most part. I've always wanted to be an artist, and I've tried multiple things throughout my life to get that art out there. I wrote a book that was almost 1,000 pages long, and it kind of went nowhere, and that's fine. I wrote the book, you know, like, what else can you say? I did the thing. I was in a band and sang and wrote songs. I've written poetry. I have tried to get projects going. I really wanted to do a radio show at one point. I did a radio show, actually. I was in college radio for a couple of semesters at Bluefield State, where I hosted a couple of radio shows. But, I mean, I wanted to do, like, an old-timey, like, radio show where it was, like, voice-acted, you know? And as I've been kind of doing this show, I've kind of figured out that my art form is spoken word. Which spoken word has a connotation with the art world. It's usually people who do, like, poetry. Like slam poetry, that kind of thing. But to me, spoken word is also storytelling. And what is this podcast if not a form of storytelling? You know, I'm letting you have a peek into what's going on in my head and things that have happened to me. And I'm letting you take what you want from it. I'm not going to compare myself to the man, of course, but I mean, am I not trying to do what David Lynch did? Am I not putting out stuff and not really giving you an answer to why it happened or how it happened or what you should take away from it? I'm leaving that on you, you know? I'm just giving you a question. You answer it as best as you can. So maybe that's how we as weirdos master our fate and our destiny. We honor those who came and left before us. You know, we honor David Bowie. We honor Prince. We honor David Lynch. We honor Klaus Nomi. We honor all of the glorious, fucking bizarre, strange, beautiful, creative, oddballs, people who were looked down on and spit on and had shit thrown at them and had awful things said and done to them. And we join them in that sense. We join them in that pursuit of art and that pursuit of creativity and that pursuit of just, I got asked once, what was I hoping to accomplish by doing this show? Like, do I want it to take off and be like my career or something like that? And that's incredibly foolish. I don't think that's ever going to happen. To me, the meaning of art as somebody who is an artist is to put yourself out there in hopes of understanding. You hope that you speak this message and you speak it with your authentic voice in the language that you understand, and you put it out there hoping to find someone who also speaks that same language and understands it. Maybe, like I said, maybe that's the point. Is maybe that's what we need to do. I'm like I said, I'm just asking questions. I'm trying to figure it out too. You know, should us as the weirdos and the artists and the masters of our destiny and fate, should we all just start shouting into the void, looking for understanding and making those connections again? I don't know. I hope so. It'd be nice. To quote the great Henry Rollins, once you're on the outside, a part of you is always going to be out there. And I think if you're a weirdo and you're an artist or a creative type or an oddball or a master of your own destiny or fate, you've been on the outside more than a few times. So I hope that's what we do. Something that David Lynch was doing later on in life was he was putting out these videos where he would tell you what the weather was like in Los Angeles to excruciating degrees. And he would also throw in a music recommendation at the end of it. You know, like, ah, oh, the weather is 5 degrees Celsius and it's mildly windy outside. I was thinking of the song. So because it's, you know, because I'm doing that essentially by throwing out a music recommendation. I was thinking of a song. I was thinking of the song Kirk Cameron Crowe by the band Snowing. Who doesn't love a mashup of names of kind of terrible people? So Kirk Cameron Crowe, there you go. But Snowing is an emo band from Pennsylvania. They were very short-lived. They had a major impact on the genre of music that they were a part of. And the David Lynch connection comes from the fact of the character Denise from Twin Peaks, who is played by David Duchovny. Denise is a transgender woman who works for the FBI, and there is a very amazing line where David Lynch's character, Gordon, says that he basically called out the other FBI agents after Denise transitioned and basically said, "Fix your hearts or die." The band Snowing, have a member of the band who, after they broke up and kind of came back together, transitioned in the meantime. And to raise money for, you know, the trans community and charity groups that are assistant to them, Snowing put out a t-shirt, which is very rare. Like I said, they've been kind of a broken up band for a while. But it is a t-shirt that features David Duchovny as Denise with the trans flag colors that just says the band name. And on the back, it says, "Fix your hearts or die." So there's your David Lynch connection to the band Snowing. The song Kirk Cameron Crowe is about someone who is trying to confess that their love for someone, but they are not able to for whatever reason. It's a very brief and short song. But there's an amazing, you know, the last few lines of it are really great in my opinion, which is, "No, don't take it as an insult. I only wish you were staring at me when I roll over because I can't sleep at night, or when I'm smiling because there's snow falling outside, or when the brakes lock and we're clearly going to die. I'm going to grab your arm and scream, 'I love you.'" And the last line is, "I hope you know that I'll love you." So it is basically a song about being uncomfortable with this person staring at you. And it's because you don't know why they're staring at you, but you have your, you don't mind it, but you would like it a lot more if they're staring at you for a much better reason, you know? So that was kind of my wrap up on David Lynch. God bless you, you weirdo. I hope you're having fun out there wherever you are. But David would probably want you to also be recklessly brave and delusionally confident. There's a third part that not many people know about, but it's also hopelessly optimistic. So there you go. I'll talk to you guys in a week. Behave yourselves.